Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans from around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome, everybody. I am pleased to have a very interesting guest today. Ivo Dominguez Jr., welcome.
It's lovely to be here.
Thank you, Ivo. Would you please tell us about how you started your spiritual path and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Keeping it a short story, because that really is a long journey. I think it started because I was one of those kids that never stopped having invisible friends. I would see things, feel things, and most children, it's chalked up to imagination, but as time went on, I realized that I wasn't growing out of seeing or hearing or experiencing other things. So I would say that the beginning of my journey was the recognition that I was experiencing the world a bit differently than my friends and certainly differently than a lot of my family members. So when I was, a little kid, I began to be aware of spirits in the house. I had a prophetic dream the night before my grandfather died, and indeed he died that evening. And much to the consternation of my parents, who were trying to believe that I wasn't having real experiences, but that just made it a little bit harder for them. So, as you might gather from the name, I was born in Cuba, came over when I was 3 years old and raised more or less Catholic, though I was always the kid that asked the wrong questions or the right questions, depending on your perspective, which led me to go on exploring about all sorts of different religions and spiritual paths from around the world. And what I discovered in the end was that I was drawn to those things that were metaphysical, those things that were esoteric, those that were outside of the cleanly drawn lines of most of the religions I encountered. So over the years, I experimented with many systems and found my way towards Wicca because I have a deep love of nature. And I was one of those kids that loved to spend time in the forest and climb trees, not just because it was fun to be outside, but because I liked feeling the power of nature. And that led me to find my way to a path that venerates nature as being sacred and holy. Along the way, I learned astrology. I learned about the Tree of Life, Kabbalah, and about ceremonial magic and a bunch of other things, and continue to, you know, be a student of anything that expands the understanding that we have of this big, beautiful universe that surrounds us. So I guess that's the short story version of it.
Well, I think that is short, and I'm sure it took several decades to get there.
Yes.
So I think the first thing I'd like to talk to you about is your new book, Keys to Perception.
Sure.
And tell us, what is the book about, how it happened to be that you wrote that particular book, and what can we learn from it?
Boy, Keys to Perception is a practical guide to psychic development, though honestly, it could have been called Keys to Knowing, Keys to Being Fully Present in the World that Surrounds You, because as much as it is a book about developing your intuition and your capacity to sense the subtle realms that surround us and the beings and spirits that surround us, it's also about learning how to pay attention, because so much of what is present in your physical senses is ignored most of the time. I tell a story about when I was in college. I took an art class, not because I was an art major, but because I like art. And one of the things that the devilish, evil graduate student had us do was he came in and he put a white tablecloth on a table and put a white ceramic bowl and put some white marble balls and some white light bulbs, and everything was white on white on white. And then set the oil paints in front of us and said, paint that, but you can't use just black and white and gray. I want you to use all the colors that I've put in front of you. Well, and for a moment, everybody was, you know, kind of staring and wondering what they were going to do, because it really looked like you were staring into the whiteout of a snowstorm, which, by the way, we're having. And then after a moment of really paying attention, you realize there was a subtle bit of yellow reflected from the lights in the ceiling. There was a little bit of a bluish cast on the where the window in the north was streaming in, just giving a little bit of the color of the sky, where you could see that actually none of the things were truly white, but actually 1,001 pastels, each surface broken up with tiny bits of color in different ways. And that was in front of us the whole time, but until we actually looked fully, we didn't see it. And in a lot of ways, opening to the psychic senses or to the world around us is not that different than learning how to see, hear, touch, and feel the physical world that's around us. Now, why the book happened? I've been giving classes for years, and quite a few people said, I love your classes. I would love to have something I can reread and hang on to and repeat the exercises at home. So that was a bit of a motivation, and then there was another bit. I do a lot of work that involves ritual and celebrating the change of the holidays and working with the goddess and the god in various forms, etc. And it was also very clear to me that people's experience of those transformative rituals was often enriched if they were also opening their senses to experience the energy or to receive guidance more fully. So I said, okay, that's another reason to write the book. So after many more people gave me nudges, I said, I'm going to make time in the schedule, and I'm going to try to create a book that's a good mixture of both theory and practice and a little bit of storytelling to put things in context. And that's how the book came about, and came out through Wiser Books this past September, and so far it's doing pretty well.
Well, that's interesting. I'm 79 years old, and I've been teaching metaphysics for 60 years. And attention
yep.
is your life. And people do not understand this. They spend a lot of time in what I call And Da is a place where you're not using thought. You may be thinking about the future or the past, where
right.
you're in yourself. And even though you were sitting in a room full of light and colors and energies and auras
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
sounds and smells, you disconnect from it for some reason.
Yeah.
And attention, where your attention is your life. And your thoughts create your reality, not your thinking. So
mm-hmm.
to be able to reopen your five senses again to now time perception is like having a miracle happen to you, because you will see, feel, hear, and know things that you ignored, that were always there, but you ignored them. So any type of book that opens your senses, that works like this, is something of value. Where can we buy Keys to Perception?
Well, thankfully, it's being well distributed. It's available at most bookstores. I know Barnes & Noble has it. I know that, though I always tell people, if you have a small independent local bookstore, please support them, because they really need to survive and exist in this world. But if you don't have one of those nearby, then any of the chain stores should have it or be able to order it. And, of course, nowadays you can always find everything online. So it's pretty easy to get it. There's also, you know, the Kindle and Nook version available for people that like to have things in a digital format. I'm turning 60 this year, and I still prefer to have a physical book in my hand, though I do have things on my Kindle as well.
Well, I like the books, and I like the feelings of them, and I also notice that if I read a book, it has a different energy to it than if I haven't read a book. If I get a used book, it brings the energies of all the people and places that it has been. So sometimes finding a book in a used store that was well-respected and well-honored can bring more things to you than just the book and the contents of the book. So
I completely agree.
It's important. And, of course, there's some things I have on my Kindle and like that. But I'm really, really a book person. So
one more thing about books, though, because I always tell people, if I have a book that has been signed by the author and I don't understand the passage I'm reading or I'm puzzled about something, I'll put my finger on their signature and ask. Basically try to use the signature of the author to tap into, okay, what were they thinking about in that phrase or in that paragraph or in that page?
Oh, that is a real great tool. I also noticed something. In my bedroom, I have a bookcase next to my bed. Usually I've always had one next to my bed. And one night after I fell asleep, my astral body was going to go up and play and do something.
Yep.
And as it was leaving my body, I saw my mental body standing next to the bookshelf reading a filmy version of one of the books that was on my shelf. And they were, having studied with 16 teachers all over the world, there are teachers that say to you that if you bring a book into your bedroom, that you, depending on your awareness and your interest in that particular book, I'm sure if there was a book of carpentry in my bedroom, I would have zero on it. But ceremonial magic or high magic, I might, a little bit more.
You will
absorb it after a year and a day, and we're back to that year and a day again.
Yeah, that magical number.
That magical number. So keeping books around you is also very important.
Yes.
And so, all right. I want to talk about sacred space. I have probably thousands of students all over the world that practice many, many different things, from sacred to geometry to hands-on healing. And sacred space keeps coming up over and over again. And I want you to share with us what sacred space is to you, and what do you teach about sacred space?
I actually wrote a book called Casting Sacred Space as well a couple of years back, so I have a lot to say about it, but I think that one of the ways to conceptualize the need for it is to get past the words for a second. I've had students say, well, you know, why do we need to create sacred space? Isn't everywhere sacred? And the answer is, yes, in a manner of speaking, but as a for example, let's say that you're about to go into a deep meditation or on a inner journey or do serious work where you don't want to be interrupted. Wouldn't you unplug the phone? Wouldn't you make sure that you're not about to be interrupted? If you were sitting outside, and I love doing things outside, and there were a lot of mosquitoes, you'd probably be happier if you were inside a screen house so that you wouldn't be feasted upon while you were trying to do the work. So to one degree, there are kinds of creating a volume of space around you, the sacred space, simply to help control the distractions. So that's one kind. Another possibility is the idea of something that's a container to assist you to focus your energies. If you've ever been to a concert hall, you've probably notice that some of them, the acoustics were so glorious that whoever was singing or playing a guitar or doing whatever they were doing, it sounded much, much better than if they were simply in a flat, square room. Because the shape of the room, helps to focus the sound. So when you create sacred space, sometimes it's like creating the perfect band shell or creating the energy acoustics so that the work that you're about to do is stronger and more resonant, more focused, more harmonious. And occasionally you're doing something where you actually are putting up sacred space because you need a boundary against the intrusion of that which would be unwholesome. that's less common, and actually I would say it's the least common problem. But there are as many different kinds of sacred space as there are needs for different kinds of rooms or architecture or garments. For example, there is a kind of sacred space that is created simply because people are sitting together and focusing together on the same thing, whether it's meditating or sitting down for a session to communicate with the spirit or any number of things. But there's formal and informal creation of sacred space. And there's also a quick little trick that I included in the Keys to Perception book that's kind of a safety thing that I ended up creating accidentally years ago because have you ever been to New Orleans?
Yes.
Can it be spiritually loud?
Yes, and just imagine everybody's buried above ground too.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this was, I was much younger and I'd been out enjoying New Orleans and perhaps it had, you know, one too many whiskeys and I had a friend that was with me that was extremely open and sensitive and could not shut down the din of all the energy and all the spirits and all the beings around them. And I was too tired and frankly it had one too many, so I was not in a space to banish or clear the room quickly and easily. So they were a knitter, so we just took the yarn and some salt water and soaked the yarn in the salt water and quickly created a little bit of boundary of energy, tied it in a loop and just dropped a circle of yarn covered in salt water around her bed and she could sleep.
That's pretty powerful. Listen, people, all my people who can't sleep, maybe your house is your house, but remember the ether is the ether, and things can travel in the ether.
Especially
and we need our boundaries.
And especially if somebody's in the process of beginning to open up their senses.
That's correct.
It's one thing once you've become accustomed to things, and things are now almost a matter of habit in the same way that, going back to the knitting thing for a moment, knitting looks like it's impossibly complicated when you're looking at it, but the people that are doing it and are avid knitters don't even have to think about it. It just happens when you're doing this kind of...
I live in a 5,000-foot geodesic dome, so the dome...
I live in a dome, too.
has been a church and stuff, yep. And I still do services. One of the things I teach about sacred space is the more you do something in it, let's say you have a meditative space, and I have one place where I meditate.
Sure.
It's 1 × 1 = 3. When you come to spiritual energy, if you do it 9 times in that particular space, then it's like 81 times. Every time you have a ritual, every time you sit in that one place, every time I do a healing with my table exactly lined up on my healing rug from Morocco, the table exactly lined up for one thing, that every time you do this, and once again that comes to the word ritual, is doing it over and over again, that you multiply and empower that space. Sacred space must be impeccable. And what do I mean about that? Well, of course, I've got dogs. I vacuum. If I'm going to have a healing or something, I vacuum. I don't want trash, Kleenex, feathers or anything growing through my sacred space. So if I'm going to put my hands on someone who has cancer, I am not going to leave one behind, and I am not going to have anything that doesn't belong to what I'm doing, somebody else's gloves, somebody who left their glasses, anything in my sacred space. And please remember, the more times you repeat what you're doing in your sacred space, the more powerful it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So what other hints do you have for sacred space?
Well, if you have a system of belief, and most people that are doing this work have one, and I'm not going to say that one is better than the other, but what I will say is if you have a system of belief, if you work with particular concepts of how the universe is put together, or maybe you work with the four elements, maybe you have an idea of sacred directions, maybe not. But whatever it is that you view as, this is the way that the universe is put together, these are the forces that uphold and support, whether it's elementals or archangels, it doesn't matter. But figure out a way to include your cosmology, your sense of the whole, when you're creating sacred space. Because when you're creating sacred space, in effect, you are making a small model of the universe. You're making a small temple. And whether it's whether the space is just as big as where you're seated or standing, or whether it's a huge room that you're about to use for a meditation class or a healing session or a celebration, it's important to include your belief structure in it. Because it also attracts helpers, attracts alliances, attracts support from those beings that think well of you and wish to support you.
Well, you know, you create a quantum field, and it's just you and your clients in that quantum field, and it's you and your client. But my God, there are angels out there. They're
all manner of things.
Oversouls, protectors of directions and elements beyond what we can imagine. And there's spiritual doctors. Spiritual psychic surgeons, spiritual chiefs and healers that you can call in. If I'm going to be in a sacred space, there has to be higher powers, and there has to be something from the earth. It is all wonderful indeed to pray and be up in that spiritual or mental realm, but if I want a physical plane healing, I better...
Physical.
Include the physical.
Sure.
So my eyes are not closed and I'm not waving my hands into space up on that mental and the spiritual level and expecting somebody to heal something. You have to include, I don't want to say you have to include the elements, but you need to include the spiritual, you need to include the physical plane.
Well, how about this? With different kinds of helpers, beings that are of good help for you, then it's a good thing to be always polite in both physical and spiritual worlds and invite them. And when it comes to doing the work, sacred space is about also creating a bridge between all the different levels of reality.
Now, that's an important statement we don't hear when we hear about sacred space. It is a bridge. And I think that is a very key word. And to look at it as having your sacred space and having two or three bridges out there bridge into the etheric and higher realms and the physical realm.
Well, if it doesn't go all the way to the physical realm, then whatever you're doing, has no exit ramp to get onto the earth plane.
Well, that's very true. In many clients, and I've taught maybe 10,000 healers this lifetime, and many times they are taught to close their eyes and go way out in the center of the universe and pray really hard or do whatever they do. And they're working on a patient who is here in the illness, the disease is on physical earth plane, and they want an physical earth example. And then they're wondering why they don't get it, because they didn't call in the earth forces. They're not really super well grounded. You know, one of my assignments for physical space and in spiritual space is write 100 ways for you to get grounded, you know, and write 100 ways for you to get connected. So sacred space is really, really important, impeccable. Friends, helpers, higher powers, directions, elements, colors. I have one friend who's really strange, and he calls in, well, the note C major, come in and create this vibration, and B sharp, come in. First time he did something with one of my group, we're all looking at him, and he's calling in all the notes, and we're like, wow, this is interesting. And it was really powerful. It was, and I also like to see something from all the elements. I have my seashell or my bowl of water. Mm-hmm. I have my lit candle for my fire. I have, of course, I always have air. Sometimes I have a small water fountain. So earth, water, air, and fire represented in my sacred space. In you know, there, you can have crystals, you can have salt, you can have lots of things. That's a pretty important thing. Now I'd like to move along to very fun topic. I like to talk about spirit guides. So tell us a little bit about spirit guides, or a lot.
Or a lot. Well, telling people about spirit guides is kind of like opening up a book about zoology. There's so many kinds. But here's what I'm going to say for myself, at least. They don't always, you don't always have the same ones. Some of them are there for the duration of the time that you're doing the work. Some of them are going to stick around your whole life. Some of them are going to change out. Some of them may or may not actually be anything other than a piece of you from a different time and place. And I'm going to suggest that it is more important that you have a solid sense of, is this a working relationship that is productive and helpful, and less worrying about exactly what are you. Let me give you an example. There is a spirit that showed up in my life, I guess when I was around 17 years old, and it looked a particular way. Because this is what I, as a 17-year-old boy, I expected it to be this, you know, tall figure with a cloak and eyes like stars, because that's what I, at that age, thought that that kind of being should look like. And it stuck with me for a number of years, and then sometime, I guess it was in my 40s, a being appeared again when I was doing a healing work, actually, on someone. And it felt familiar, but it looked very different. And it came, and it felt even more familiar, and then it laid hands on my hands as well. And then I looked at it and said, I know you. Well, here's the thing. It no longer looked the same, but was the same being, because how I perceived it now as an adult with many years of experience, I wrapped it in a different image. But what felt the same was, when we were doing the work together, it felt the same, though it no longer looked the same. So,
well, that's pretty powerful. But you know what? When I was 16, somebody who was 30 was really old. And now that I'm 79, somebody who's 30 doesn't look so old, you know?
Somebody who's 30 looks like just out of childhood.
Yeah, I'm learning. Can you drive? Do you have a driver's license? You know? So I have a concept I teach that's very off the board, weird. 50% of your experiences on planet Earth, you were a spirit guide. So my body, my essence, my soul that's in this body right now, was a spirit guide to a chef last life, last time I was around. And this lifetime, I ended up going to Gordon Blue Cooking School in Spain and becoming a chef.
Right.
I believe that it's really important, if we're going to look at our past lives, it's really important to look at what and who you spirit guided, because you will usually spirit guide some human being, live being, that is doing something that you are going to want to complete in your embodiment this lifetime. And it mind boggles me just to think that 50% of my experiences, I was somebody else's spirit guide or several people's spirit guide. Because we can bop around, there's no time. If I could have somebody I'm guiding in China and somebody I'm guiding in New York and Arkansas at the same time. And I think that's an important thing for us when we look at our big picture, to take a look at that.
Well, I think time's, yeah, agreed. I mean, time's a lot more slippery than people imagine. There was, we were at a house where we had been asked to check out what was going on because nothing really bad was going on, but honestly, there were people that were just startled because they were experiencing spirits in their house. And one of the individuals that kept coming down the steps and into a living room kept insisting that they were alive. And the people that had been there before, that were the local ghost hunters or whatnot, were trying to convince this spirit to move on, blah, blah, blah. And I came in and looked at the spirit and I said, that's not a dead person. And they looked at me, oh, it's got to be a dead person. It's got to be a ghost because this, this, and this. I said, no, this is somebody who is currently physically, the amount of vital energy that was visible in this entity, in this spirit, this is somebody who is alive and probably asleep somewhere in the past and projecting themselves into the future. This is a living being. You're arguing that they're dead, but they're actually asleep in their bed somewhere in the past coming here because these people are their descendants. And once we said that, then some of the information the being was trying to get across made sense. And once the message was delivered, it ceased to be present in that household. But the idea for them that it was a spirit of somebody living in the past being present in the future was something that was beyond what they had expected.
Wow. You know, it's so amazing the things that can happen in life, and how spirit and how even living people can
mm-hmm.
touch you and maybe never even know you. And people say, oh, Star, you came to my house, you did this. And of course I came to their house in spirit. I've got contractual agreements to heal them, to work with them, to mentor them. And oh, Star, you appeared in my house. Of course I did. Whether my consciousness remembers that or not,
that's a different story. That's a different question.
And you, me, every one of us out there, if we love and care and have verbal, written, contractual agreements with somebody, we will appear to them when we're sleeping, and sometimes even when we're not sleeping. If I'm eating lunch and someone says, I was in a lot of pain and I saw you and my pain stopped, it did happen. There are levels and layers that we can't measure, we can't understand right now.
Well,
and I think
and we're much bigger than the part of us that is capable, and the part of us that's talking to each other right now is just a portion of who we are. We're all much bigger beings than what can be expressed in physical time and space. So of course, there's a lot more going on, and
that excites
how about this?
Me.
Yeah, it does excite me too. It's like a big giant window, the kind where it's broken up into each little panel like leaded crystal. And our normal waking consciousness that moves in this time and space is just one little pane in that big window that's the totality of who you are. And it's a question of we may be looking through that particular little pane this moment, but that doesn't mean that the rest aren't present.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Okay, Sean, can we do commercial break here?
Oh, my.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans from around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
Well, thank you, everybody. I am here with Evo Dominguez Jr., and you can find him on the Internet at evodominguezjr.com, and that's I-V-O, and the regular spelling for Dominguez. Evo, I'd like to talk a little bit about magic, ceremonial magic, ritual magic.
Yep.
Let's talk about how 100 years ago, even in the 60s, I mean, back in the 60s, I'd go many places, and there'd be people, invitations to come to this ceremony, to come to this, or come do this and that. And how now? How now this is fading away, and how important this is in our life?
Yeah. You know, perhaps first bit is just to talk about what is meant by ritual magic or ceremonial magic how about this?
Go ahead.
So, if let's say that someone needed a little bit of help with they just bumped their shin and they're in pain, so I can just, you know, I could quickly just move my hand over it and reduce the pain or do just a quick little bit of energy work. Okay. And that's fine for that purpose. It would, if it were a more severe injury, I might also, in addition to doing the energy work, say, hey, we've got to elevate that leg for a moment to help to reduce the swelling, and maybe we're going to put ice on it for the first 20 minutes and then take it off, la, la, la. So there's a process, a protocol, a procedure for how to seek the best possible outcome for the healing of that injury. All right. Well, though we can do almost anything and everything with our minds and with our energies, with our spirits, human beings are tool users. Human beings also exist in the physical realm for a good reason, so that when we have a ritual or a ceremony where there are particular objects used to hold and shape energy, when there is a particular order in which energy is raised and shaped and focused, when particular powers are called in, it's like the equivalent of using technology in the same way that it's easier if I have a wheelbarrow to carry the firewood into my house than picking it up one piece at a time and carrying it in armload by armload. The use of ritual is a way of magnifying, focusing, or easing things that would otherwise be more difficult. It's like applying physics to metaphysics. And it's as much an art as it is a science, or you can compare it to music. Even though you can make 1,001 different kinds of music, there is music theory that explains why there's X intervals between certain notes to produce a chord or a harmony, or why certain keys evoke certain feelings. So ritual and ceremonial magic, whether it's low magic or middle magic or high magic, is about using the props and using the procedure, using the technology of magic to magnify and to focus what our natural gifts are. I, for one, you know, I wear corrective lenses, you know, contacts or glasses, and I am happy for the fact that those things exist because I can see with my physical eyes more clearly. When we use ritual, it is a way also of clarifying the work that we're doing. So it's important, but it also takes time to learn, and it also is something that it's hard to find. It's hard to find good teachers because the number of people that became interested in metaphysics or New Age or occult or fill in the blank for whatever word you like grew so fast that it hugely outstripped the number of teachers. So, and though there's much that you can learn from a book, and there's much you can do listening to shows such as this, you don't know how a ritual actually works until you're actually in a ritual that's run by somebody who actually knows what they're doing. So you actually have to have a physical world experience of it to then be able to incorporate it into your own practices.
It is a caught teaching, not necessarily a taught teaching. If you can, mm-hmm. you can read about rituals and you can go mm-hmm. home and do them all by yourself. But
yep.
once you've
yep.
been in the presence of a person who knows what they're doing, and
yeah.
you can learn from, on all those levels we can't measure, the download,
right.
what I call it, is
right.
we'll teach you how to do that particular ritual. And
yeah.
one of the things I've noticed since 1971 is what it used to take me a year to teach people,
mm-hmm.
I can teach them in 3.5 hours now.
Mm-hmm. There's been an acceleration.
Yes, it's been accelerated, and that's interesting. And also that when I used to do Enochian watchtowers, I used to have read 18, 19 pages in a foreign language that I was never knowing if I was pronunciating right or you know, I'd lose my place and then start over again. And through the 50 years of working with it, I've developed a page in English now for each of the gatekeepers that works really well.
Sure.
For me, but I can't give this to somebody who's just coming into doing rituals and say, here, call in the gatekeepers. They read it and nothing happens because they don't have my decades of experience. So ritual empowers, once again, we talk about this, the more times you're present
at it,
first of all, it's someone else's, so you can learn, then you do your own, the more it magnifies, amplifies, does whatever it's supposed to do. And
it's a lot like there's a difference between watching people dance. Let's say that you go to a ballet or modern dance and you're watching amazing physical feats. Maybe you've done some studying and you actually look at the pages of choreography that describe what the dance is going to be. But until you've actually joined the group that's dancing and been dancing and had whoever was the teacher in the group correct your forms, like up your knee bobbled a little bit, up you need to shift your center of gravity up slightly when you do that. Until you have that part, it's really hard to fully immerse yourself in the whole thing.
And it's something like people go, oh, do the law of attraction, do this, do that, do that. And it's like the simple rituals that build into intermediate, into advanced rituals are very important. You know, one of the first things I was taught in 1959 was a small ritual of gratitude. And my teacher then taught me that if you don't say thank you for something, then God's spirits don't know if you totally received it, and you cannot get what you ask for next.
Mm-hmm.
So this small ritual of gratitude, you know, every time I receive something esoteric, clarity, physically, mentally, I do this small ritual of gratitude, and it's been like great oil to my life. It's made things run smoother, and rituals can be very, very small things, but most importantly, rituals need to celebrate.
Yes.
And let's talk to us a little bit about how important it is to celebrate the passing of the sun, the rituals, you know, whatever it is that we celebrate. How important is this to our spiritual life?
I think that human beings need reminders. It's very easy to become distracted in day-to-day life, so we need reminders to reconnect with the world. One of the reasons that I appreciate the value of celebrating the change of the seasons and the cycle of the moon is because it's very easy to live indoors with heating and lighting and walls that keep out the elements and imagine, only imagine what we imagine has a certain level of reality, a separation between us and the flow of life and power that is the natural world around us. So that when we make time to celebrate the spring equinox or the full moon or the dark moon or whatever, it is a way of reaffirming our connection to the tides of time and space and life around us. And when we do that, we are in a more harmonious relationship with those powers so that we are more capable of listening and hearing guidance when it's coming, and to summon and stir those powers when we need them to do our own work. So that would be a reason enough to do it, but there's another reason, because oftentimes seasonal celebrations or festivals were the thing that binds people together, families, communities. Show me a part of the world where they have lots of festivals to celebrate the coming of the cherries or the first full moon of spring or a thousand one other things. And I'll show you a community where people know each other's names and actually care and work with each other, so that it also has a binding effect to create community when you celebrate the natural cycles as well. And you were talking about bringing it down to earth. That brings it down to earth, because it's about being with your friends and neighbors and the people that are part of your community as well.
I agree, and I agree that we can't replace New Year's Eve watching the ball fall with a bag of chips and a beer in our bed. We're celebrating with fans and dancing and whatever, even though we may not mention it. Oh, I made some goals. I didn't make some goals. I learned some lessons.
Right.
I'm still carrying. That whole New Year's, whether it be Chinese New Year's, American New Year's, whatever, Jewish New Year's, whatever, celebrating that. It's like the pilot light in the gas. It's like keeping that alive. And celebrating with other people. It's really important if you want that magic in your life, if you want your senses to become alive, that celebration is important.
Well,
so
what else do you think?
It makes
us alive.
It keeps us alive, not in body, but in soul.
Right.
You know? What else do you think it's important for our listeners to know, our metaphysical, spiritual listeners to know right now?
Right at this moment in time?
Well, I mean at this earthly moment in time, not at this second, but what's going on?
Sure, sure. It is not a surprise to anyone that all over the world at this time there seems to be a great level of distress, a great level of pain and anxiety and fear about the future. And if you are a spiritual person, if you are somebody who is opening their psychic senses, opening to the world, then I'm going to suggest to you that you actually have a greater obligation to make it right. To the degree that you are holding and anchoring your own sense of well-being, your own sense of hopefulness, seeing the glow of spirit around plants and animals and other people, recognizing that you have the capacity to change the world around you bit by bit, but you do, is necessary counterbalance to the huge amount of anxiety and distress and injustice that's in the world right now. And if you are a spiritual person, then your job is to bring spirit all the way down to the physical plane. And if that means that you are holding a space of solidity in the world around you, then you're doing an important thing. You're doing something that matters in the long run. And if we don't do that, those of us that have opened our eyes even just a little crack, then it makes it easier for there to be this negative feedback loop of more pain and fear and injustice in the world.
I agree, and I also agree that a lot of negativity is coming out of the planet Earth and out of humans.
Oh, yes.
And when that negativity is gone, there is a space there, and it is up to us to put positive, appropriate things in that space. So if the Earth and the humans are getting rid of so much BS is what all I can cause. Just remember, don't focus on that. Focus on what we're going to put in space and place from where that ever came out of. That's really important.
And if you see someone in your life who is doing good work, and that could be spiritual work, that could be being a school teacher and doing mundane stuff that is really important, or that could be somebody who is writing regular editors to the letters to the editor of your local paper, you know, pointing out things that need to change. You can also be their support by bringing them peace, bringing them a sense of connection. Because the people that are doing the work in the world also need to be reminded that they are being held in positive regard.
This is true. And support the people who give to you spiritually. Support the people who give to the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with Ivo Dominguez Jr., IVO, DominguezJr.com. And he has just came out with a new book called The Keys to Perception, which you can purchase in your local bookstore or online. Tell us, you travel. I looked at your calendar. You're all over the place. Tell us what you do at these expos, conferences, shows.
Though I'll tell you what happened when I finished the book. I put it out to the universe that if anybody asked me for 2018, I would say yes. I'm glad I limited it to 2018 because my schedule got too busy.
it's amazing.
Be careful what you ask for.
Because when you get it, you might realize it's not really what you needed or wanted.
Well, I think there's already been a couple of times this year that I've missed sleeping in my own bed. So.
Okay. Do you do sessions? Do you leave?
Well,
I know you have a long list of classes on your website.
Yeah.
Do you do sessions?
At these events, mostly I am teaching workshops or running rituals, because I think, you know, we spoke a lot about ritual today. One of my jobs, in my mind, is that when I go to these events, I try to convince the organizers to not just let me do classes or readings, but to do rituals, because I think people need to have direct exposure to rituals. So a lot of what I'm doing at those things is either workshops or rituals.
And your calendar is on your website.
On my website.
Okay.
Yep.
We're going to be leaving here in a minute or two. Are there any last thoughts for us, Ivo?
Yes. One of the things that I've observed many times is people begin the process of opening or reopening, in some cases, their psychic senses. And then they got a little bit more than they wanted, and they're a bit overwhelmed. So don't let that make you close down again. Don't let that stop. And what I like to compare it to is sunburn. If somebody goes straight out of the winter and flies to Florida and goes out and spends the whole day in the sun, what's going to happen? They're going to be crispy critters, and they're going to be miserable, and even the slightest touch of a fingertip across their arm is going to feel like somebody's dragging a nail across it, because you got too much too fast. And what's the solution? You step inside out of the sun, and you drink lots of water. So as you begin to open up your psychic senses or move more energy through your system, it takes time to adapt. And if you cross the line and you find that your aura is slightly crispy around the edges, just take a break. It doesn't mean that you must shut it down forever and never go there again, because sometimes people get afraid, but it's just a matter of taking it slow and easy and building up your tolerance, whether it be tolerance to your sun or if you were doing exercise, slowly building up flexibility rather than trying to stretch so far that something snaps. So be gentle with yourself as you explore.
Well, thank you very much, Ivo Dominguez Jr., for speaking to our audience today. This is Star. Take a moment, take a deep breath, and move on and move in with your life. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlightening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, please visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660. See you next time.